don't know. I think, like, for me, the impact that I really care about is the really, like, the deeper personal connections rather than, like, you know, this mass of people and, like, who, like, how many people are you reaching? It's more for me about, like, the locality of individuals and cultivating time with them. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that there is there's a larger impact going on that, you know, internally with them that I can't fully see yet.
And do you think some of them may continue doing art afterwards, or how do you think the impact will be when they get out?
Yeah, I'm hoping that they all continue to do work. I think a lot of them are super talented and have been encouraged to like pursue art practices, like if they want to go to college. But they're a little bit worried about like the financials about it. You know, like the main question is like, can I make money, you know, doing my artwork? You know, and I've struggled I have 2 degrees in sculpture. You know, it's not like I went to like business school. So I try to like help them think about creative ways of applying their art skills in different contexts, you know, that can help them also think about like a job and about like the practicals of like everyday life too.
And they actually have a resume has begun, right? They've shown work in at Foreland.
Yep, exactly. So like that sort of is like a measurable impact there. Like, yeah, they could put that on their resume and
or CV.
My collaborator Sophia and I are always looking and trying to think of other ways to make other opportunities. So we're thinking about like a publication next of some sort. So.
And
yeah, it's those tangible like, you know, things that like we're actually, this is leading towards something that we're producing, and so that's the whole kind of goal of like the larger nonprofit that I'm just beginning to form, is like giving platforms to incarcerated artists, to like young incarcerated artists to like help them produce their work and give them media outlets for it.
And is the Columbia Collective ending with these participants, or you're going to work in the future with other participants?
Yeah, I'm hoping it's going to be ongoing. Like, that's the goal. So I know the release dates of most of the ones that I'm working with, and you never know, like, who's going to pass through the system. Sometimes we get people into the collective for there for, like, a couple months. Some are a couple years. So... it all just depends on the nature of like who comes in, and it's open and to everyone, and I hope it continues.
And does Columbia Collective have a website for more information? And do you guys need donations of any kind?
Yeah, we do have a website. It's thecolumbiacollective.com, and there is a tab on the website to donate to the project. You can donate, like make a small monthly contribution, or, you know, you can give a one-time contribution through the donate button. And you can also look at more information on the larger nonprofit that I'm sort of forming around this idea called the Juvenile Justice Arts and Media Network. And that website is jamin.com, JJAMN.com.
And why don't we wrap things up by giving out more of the, all the details of the show and when people can see it while it's still up.
Yeah, it's open this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. I believe the hours are from 11 to 5. And there's also an event on Saturday night at Foreland with in the other gallery. That's not the artwork of the Columbia Collective, but there's another artist, Henry, who has his work up at, you know, in the other galleries. And so if you're looking for something to do Saturday night, you can come check out both shows.
And if people haven't been to Foreland, tell them where it's at and... right there on the creek, right?
Yeah. Foreland's in Catskill. It's like, yeah, right on the creek, sort of between like Main Street and Tech and Water Street.
So like behind Hilo and the movie theater back on near Bridge Street, though.
Yeah. And you can look for that sky bridge. It's like a beautiful sort of sky bridge that connects both Foreland buildings.
All right. Well, it's been great talking to you, Maggie Hazen from the Columbia Collective. Is there anything else you want to mention before we go?
No. Thank you so much for having me. I really.
This is Otis M. Carson. I'm from NYC, and you're listening to WGXC, Acra, Hudson, Catskill.
Tune in all sorts of creative community voices on the radio at WGXC on Monday, September 26th, including at 9 a.m. on the WGXC Morning Show. Rob Gellis speaks with Georgette Turner about the famous painters who lived in Columbia County during the 19th century. Then hop on the Afrosonic Taxi at 10 a.m. with tracks from Salif Keita, Essence Kazooie, and Angelique Kidjo, among others. At 11 a.m., Brendan Donegan is playing favorites with the Talking Heads live from the WGXC Hudson studio in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street. And it's time for the Deep Three show after the local news at noon with music from Abby Lee T, Christine Webster, and Aphex Twin. There's new music from around the world at 2 p.m. on the Vital Weekly show, including tracks from Tomotsuga Nakamura, Vertonin, and Tetsue Akiyama. Tracking the Odds at 3 p.m. features the work of jazz drummer Susie Abera. At 4 p.m., the WGXC afternoon show is live from Western Massachusetts with host Kieran Riley. At 6 p.m., the All Together Now show features an interview with Reef Larson about... He's the founder of the Future of Small Cities Institute, and they've got a program Tuesday talking about the Hudson waterfront in Hudson and Beacon and Kingston. At 7 p.m., it's time for the Law and Disorder show, and then at 8 p.m., Rob Van Erve hosts Everything All the Time on 90.7 FM, WGXC.
I was just going to lie down for 5 minutes, take a little nap.
Yeah, a regular Rip Van Winkle.
Who?
Another guy who took a little nap, woke up, and didn't know where he was.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acra, Catskill, and Hudson. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Georgia, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Fatia. I'm also from Hudson.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate.
And bookish.
Things.
And that's what we're going to do today.
Whoop, whoop, as per usual.
And today I just wanted to recognize that we are in the middle of Banned Books Week, which is an annual celebration of the freedom to read. And each year it spotlights both current and historical attempts to censor books in libraries and schools. The theme for this year is Books Unite Us, Censorship Divides Us. And so we wanted to recognize this commemorative week and highlight some of the books that are on the American Library Association's list of the 10 most challenged books of 2021. The ALA Office for Intellectual Freedom tracked 729 challenges to library, school, and university materials and services in 2021. And of the 1,597 books that were targeted, these are the most challenged, along with the reasons cited for censoring the books. So at number one is Genderqueer by Maya Kobabe. And the reasons were...
I love that book!
Oh, you read it?
I actually only read part of it, but it was good.
You loved the part you read. So it's been banned, challenged, and restricted for LGBTQIA plus content, and because it was considered to have sexually explicit images. And so those are three. So there's banned, challenged, and restricted. So banned means that it's either pulled from the collection, pulled from a syllabus, it's removed. Challenged means somebody challenged it. It may not have succeeded. They may have decided to retain the book. And restricted, often that'll be like it. Maybe it's in a school library, maybe it's like available, but you have to ask for it, or it's behind the desk, or it's only for certain age students, or sometimes it'll be moved within a library. So like if it's in a kids section or a teen section, it might be moved to an adult section. Or
the first few reasons are really unreasonable. I was expecting it to be a little more of a younger audience. I think it's more of like a older young adult, maybe adult book, but it's still pretty good. I'm probably a little young for it. That's why I stopped reading it. But in a few years, I'm going to resume it.
It's amazing that young really people can figure out that stuff for themselves.
Definitely. It was so good, though.
So that was number one. Number two is Lawn Boy by Jonathan Evison, banned and challenged for LGBTQIA plus content, and because it was considered to be sexually explicit. Number three is All Boys Aren't Blue by George M. Johnson, banned and challenged for LGBTQIA plus content, profanity, and because it was considered to be sexually explicit. Out of Darkness by Ashley Hope Perez was banned, challenged, and restricted for depictions of abuse and because it was considered to be sexually explicit. The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas, banned and challenged for profanity, violence, and because it was thought to promote an anti-police message and indoctrination of a social agenda. Number six is The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian by Sherman Alexie, banned and challenged for profanity, sexual references, and use of a derogatory term. Number seven is Me and Earl and the Dying Girl by Jesse Andrews, banned and challenged because it was considered sexually explicit and degrading to women. The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison, banned and challenged because it depicts child sexual abuse and was considered sexually explicit. This Book is Gay by Juno Dawson, banned, challenged, relocated, and restricted for providing sexual education and LGBTQIA plus content. Beyond Magenta by Susan Kuklin, banned and challenged for LGBTQIA plus content and because it was considered to be sexually explicit. So you can see some themes here, but those are the top most challenged books of 2021. And I'm sure some of those are also being targeted this year as well. There seems to have been a large spike in challenges over the past year. And in many cases, books are being challenged as a list. So there are lists that get passed around by groups. And so a lot of times people are targeting books that they haven't actually read for themselves. So January 1st through August 31st, the ALA's Office for Intellectual Freedom found 681 attempts to ban or restrict library materials, and this accounted for 1,651 unique book titles that were targeted, and more than 70% of these censorship attempts targeted multiple titles at the same time, so like a list of titles that people were raising concerns about. And I've said before on the show, I think it's important to have some kind of procedure where people can express their concerns about titles. I don't think that's wrong. I think it's okay for parents to want to know what their kids are reading. I don't think it's okay for people to decide what somebody else should be able to read.
I would most definitely agree with that. The exact thing that Emily said. Yeah. I want to add something on, but I can't because it's just so perfectly described.
Well, I love the example for you that you accessed this book that's really geared towards an older audience. You took it home, you started reading it, you enjoyed it, and at some point you realized it wasn't really for you. And so you're like, you know what? I'm not going to finish this. It's not really for me. Like, I'll read it again some other time.
Yeah, and I got it on ebook on Libby, so I can really reborrow it anytime. And yeah, it was good. It was pretty good.
But yeah, so I encourage everyone out there listening that believes in the freedom to read to check out some of the books that are being banned these days and see what you think of them. I will say it's often a very good reading list of books that gets on the top list, like excellent books that I would highly suggest. I haven't read all of them on this year's list, but those that I have, I really enjoyed. Would I suggest them for everybody? No, but I don't think that I get to decide what everybody reads. Well, now, moving on to talking about some books that we have been reading. I would love to hear from Georgia about a book that you've been reading.
Okay, thank you, Emily. So, this week, from Monday to Thursday, my school is having a book fair where we can go and buy books and then all these little trinkets and notebooks and water bottles and things. So I just bought books personally, but other people have bought like a lot of cute little pens and squishies and stuff. So I got three new novels. They're all young adult novels because I go to middle school and I'm in like the younger part of middle school. because I'm in sixth grade. So most of the novels were young adult, but I got three. I will share the next two in the next few weeks, but I will share the first one. I started it and I am 11 pages in. So good so far. So this is called Going Viral, A Socially Distant Love Story by Katie Ciccatelli Coos. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. And this is a young adult novel. It's like 290 pages long, about. It is so good so far. And I thought I'd just try it because it has romance, but it looks like it's just light romance, at least so far. Nothing too crazy, because, I mean, it's school library. It's not going to be something super much. It looks so good. I've been reading it, and it's a, I've actually never read one before, but it's a quarantine story. And it's really nice to read something like that, because I think it really captures, like, what people were feeling during that pandemic. Also, I rarely ever have this much to talk about with a book. I'm only 11 pages in with this book, so I have a feeling this one is going to be really good. So, yeah, it's a quarantine story, and it's also a LGBTQIA plus story, and it's so good. Well, I mean, I'm only 11 pages in. I'll confirm in later weeks, but so far it's so good. Okay. Now I'm going to finally read the description. Sorry about my ranting and blabbing. Claire is about to be in way over her head. When a worldwide pandemic strikes, Claire Draper is forced to isolate with her family indefinitely in their Brooklyn apartment. No in-person school, hanging out with friends, or worst of all, dates with her girlfriend, Vanessa. Just as it all starts getting to Claire, she looks out for her bedroom window and notices something new, a girl sitting on a fire escape across the street. Inspired, Claire starts writing a story about two girls who become friends from afar. But when the story goes viral on social media, the line between reality and fiction is blurred. Will Claire be able to tell the difference before everything spirals out of control? And so that was Going Viral by Katie Ciccatelli Coos. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. So yeah, and this is pretty recent, I think. It's copyrighted 2021, so it's pretty recent. I can't believe it's not still 2021. Just mind blown. But yeah, it's made in the last year, most likely, and it's really good so far. Definitely would recommend this. And yeah.
I don't think I've read any quarantine stories. I've read picture books, but I don't think I've read any novels. I'm curious if we'll get like a surge of them or if people are just kind of like moving along. I feel like there were some television shows that sort of did that where they either totally ignored it or like sometimes they would have a short season that touched on some of those topics and then.
I haven't seen a single show that didn't just ignore it, honestly. But like, I think it would be good if more people would acknowledge it, like TV shows and books and stuff, because I know that it's fun to like go into a fantasy where it doesn't exist. I can relate to that, but like, it's good to have books like that because then you don't feel so alone, you know? Yeah.
I agree. Well, thanks for sharing your book, Georgia. I'm going to share a book that I read recently and then we'll hand it off for Fatia for a poem of the week. So I recently read the first book in a series called Wayward Children, or the series is called Wayward Children by Shannon McGuire. And
This is a series of novellas, so they're all very short books, short stories. I mean, not short stories, but shorter novels. And it recently won, the series won Best Series Award at the Hugo Awards. And I had come across some of the titles in the series and thought they sounded interesting, but had never read it. And so when this was awarded Best Series, I was like, okay, I should read that now. And so I decided to start at the beginning, which is a great place to start. And the first book in the series is called Every Heart a Doorway. And it also won the Hugo Award for Best Novella back in 2017. So it basically takes the premise of, in fantasy stories, when somebody from our world goes through some kind of portal or goes somewhere into a fantastical world, and then they eventually come back. The idea that that would change them as a person, and in some cases would be a really hard transition for them returning. So in this story, there's a school where those people go to sort of find their way and deal with both the traumas and just the changes that experience brings into their lives. And so in this book, the main character's name is Nancy, and they came from a sort of darker place, and they've returned, and now they're sent to this boarding school, and they make some friends and like sort of learn about a little bit about where they've come from. And one of the people they connect with is a girl named Sumi, who came from like a more bright and cheerful place. So you imagine like if people go into a fantasy world, some of them are dark and grim and some of them are like more fluffy and bright. So she came from like a place where there was like candy and rainbows and it was lovely. But anyways, Sumi one day is found dead, and so are several other students. And so they're trying to sort of figure out what happened to Sumi and other students. So there's a mystery, and then there's like the fantastical element sort of in the background as well. So I thought it was just a really interesting idea, because there are a lot of those stories like Narnia, there's Labyrinth, there's Alice in Wonderland, Wizard of Oz, you know, all of those stories where people go and they're sent on this adventure, and often all of this wild stuff happens. And then like, how do you go back to your normal life after that? And in some cases, the students want to get back to their fantasy worlds. So yeah, I thought it was an interesting series. I liked the first book. I'll probably try out another one. And that was Every Heart a Doorway by Shannon McGuire, first book in the Wayward Children series. And I would say that is for teens and adults.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what the other books will be. I haven't read about them at all, so I don't know what the plot of the following book is. I'm not sure if it also centers on Nancy as a character, or if each book centers on a different character. I'm not sure how many of the books are centered at the school versus them going on adventures elsewhere. I'm very curious to see like where it goes. So I'll mention one more book quickly before we move on to Fatiha's poem. But I read this a little while ago, so I think I'm going to read the description so that I describe it as it should be. And I don't think I've talked about this on the radio before, but stop me if I have. So I read a graphic novel called The Tryout by Christina Sundtornvant, with illustrations by Joanna Kakao. And it is not I don't know. I guess it's based on her childhood, but I think it's sort of like how Shannon Hale's Best Friend series is based on her childhood, but enough has changed that it's not really a memoir. But it's definitely inspired by her childhood, and the main character has her name as well. But here, I will read the description for you. So this is a middle grade graphic novel.
Trying out for middle school cheerleader means performing in the giant school gym with the whole school watching and risking total humiliation. If Christina can make it through this, she can make it through anything. As one of the only Asian American kids in her small Texas town, Christina just wants to fit in. Luckily, her best friend Megan, who is Iranian American, can totally relate. The two girls have always been inseparable and relish creating elaborate fantasy worlds together. But middle school is a reality check, and suddenly popularity is way more important than playing pretend. When cheerleading tryouts are announced, Christina and Megan literally jump at the chance to join the squad. But does fitting in actually equal belonging? Will they survive the terrifying tryouts? And most importantly, will their friendship withstand the pressures of heated competition and rivalry? Hilarious and heartfelt, the tryout is Christina Sundtornvant's personal story, sure to make you laugh, cry, and cheer.
That sounds awesome. And yeah. Actually, I was at school and one of my friends, I saw a book on her desk. I read the title. I was like, oh, and it is open. And it was a graphic novel. I was like, oh, maybe I'll read that sometime. That was the tryouts.
I'm curious, because I've never done cheerleading or been like close friends with somebody that did cheerleading, so I don't know like how true to the experience it is, like, or how universal the experiences that she goes through in this, but it was interesting to see that experience.
My little cousin does cheer, except it's probably different for her because she is 8, so it's probably a little different.
I also think that cheerleading in popular culture is often portrayed as a place for like mean girls and people that only care about popularity and looks. And that just wasn't my experience of it in high school. I felt like the cheerleaders at our school were very nice. And
it really depends on your school. I think it just really depends on your school and experience.
Yeah. But I liked that about this book, that was not, I didn't find that to be the case in this book. She does deal with some mean people, but they aren't the cheerleaders. But that's The Tryout by Christina Sundtornvant and with illustrations by Joanna Kakao.
That sounds really good.
Yeah, it was. And I think it's her first graphic novel. She's written some novels and some nonfiction books that have been acclaimed, but this is her first graphic novel. And I'm not familiar with the illustrator, but I think you would like her style of artwork. It's very familiar in a way, in a good way.
That's cool.
So yeah, those are two very different books that I've read recently. I also read a book called Shark Princess. By Nidhi Chinnani, which is it's also a middle grade graphic novel, but I would say it's for younger kids. And the main character is a whale shark that wears a crown and decides they're a princess. And so it's like, you learn a little bit about whale sharks, but not, I mean, it's mostly just like a cutesy little story, but I like Nidhi Chinnani. And the illustrations are cute. And in the back of the book, there was like a how to draw the main character. I forget the main character's name, but.
Oh, I love those.
It was fun. So I drew a whale shark this morning.
Ooh, can we see it?
Oh, I don't have it with me. But yeah, the main character is Kitana. And they sort of go on a, like a mini adventure with their friend Mac. And so it's just like a little excursion, a little adventure. With the shark princess. I do like whale sharks quite a bit. They're pretty cool. So I approve. Anyways, I think it is time that we hear a poem. And I know Fatia has a poem to share. So let's hear from Fatia.
This poem's name is I Remember You. I remember how you always left for a while and came back home. It is so hard to believe that you gone. I remember you, brother, from the time I wake up till the time I go to sleep. I remember you when the